Hello and welcome to the Laughing Place Podcast. I am your host, Doobie Mosley, and today I am joined by Fanboy.
Hola.
My talented and lovely wife, Rebecca.
You stole my greeting. I was going to say hola.
Let's try this again. Rebecca.
Hola.
Fanboy.
Hola.
And Captain John.
Kungaloosh, mateys.
Somebody went to Adventurers Club.
Crossover. There we go.
And as I said, I am Doobie. We'd like to hear from you, podcast@laughingplace.com, and we have a voicemail phone number now, 866-718-9408.
Didn't we have that before?
Yeah, but we still have one now.
It's
all new for a year, isn't it?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, okay.
We learned that before. 866-718-9408 and podcast@laughingplace.com. Give us your feedback. Later on in the show, we're going to have a specific topic we want your feedback on, so stay tuned. But now, let's get started with a brand new attraction at Walt Disney World's...
Brand new. Nothing from it was ever seen before.
At Walt Disney World's Epcot Center 92. Rebecca, tell us all about it.
Well, I guess it was last weekend. Grand Fiesta... Oh, wait, let me get this right. It's Grand Fiesta Tour Boat Cruise starring the Three Caballeros.
Presented by Mexico.
It's a boat. The Mexico boat ride, as many of you who have been to Walt Disney World will remember, you travel through Aztec ruins and various things like this. And what's happened now is that the screens that previously featured, I don't know, rather short loops of live actors and such, now have a combination of live action and the animated Three Caballeros.
And the song is gone.
I know, and the...
Welcome, mis amigos, to friendly Mexico.
The song is gone. It's been replaced by the Three Caballeros, which repeats throughout the attraction.
Mm-hmm. Like Small World.
And the Three Caballeros, what is that? Donald, Jose, and...
Panchito.
And they are Mexican characters, correct?
No. Jose Carioca represents Brazil, as I recall, from the Saludos Amigos and whatnot. And Panchito is a Central American representation. So he has the big sombrero. So that's actually one of the changes that you'll notice in the character, as I understand it.
Jose is wearing a little sombrero.
Yeah, so I didn't even notice
than, like,
it.
Rather than the hat. He had like a straw hat.
Yeah, somebody else pointed that out
to me.
There's
also something else missing from Jose.
A cigar?
Yes.
Yes.
But does Panchito have his holster?
I don't think so, no.
See, I'm not sure if he does. I meant to pay attention. I meant to look for that, and I can't recall.
Donald Duck does have his temper. He lost his swimsuit, though. That's like, I was watching today, because I was bored, I watched a classic Donald Duck cartoon called How to Get Hurt at Work. It was a sort of an industrial cartoon that they did, and Donald Duck is Mr. Safety at home, but when he goes to work, he's tired, he's not paying attention, and he gets hurt all the time. And they did the classic Donald Duck gag where his like clothes get ripped into the machine. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that has been used in more Donald Duck cartoons than anything else. Donald Duck naked. There's just something funny about that.
Then he covers himself up.
He covers up his lower regions that don't have anything to begin with.
Thank you, Fanboy.
Sorry for the debate.
Well, that was just always, it's always been very strange.
I think we brought this up before, didn't we?
We have a new attraction to discuss here. We're tangenting on Donald Duck putting a towel on only when he gets out the shower.
But look at this. It's classic humor. Do you have a problem with Walt Disney's classic animation?
No, in fact, I rather enjoyed it in...
Grand Fiesta.
In Grand Fiesta, despite the fact I was adamant against this because Disney characters in the World Showcase were a bad idea. And then, you know what? They did it. It's not such a bad idea. And I think Rebecca pointed out to me why I actually enjoyed it here. Rebecca, why did I like it?
I think because in this case, the Three Caballeros serve as a host, and the educational feel of the attraction hasn't changed that much from what it was before. I didn't feel like I learned any less about the Mexico and the imagery of Mexico with the addition of the Three Caballeros versus the way the attraction was previously, unlike the Seas Change, where before it was kind of an exploration. You had the film that was the And It Rained,
And It Rained.
The world. And then you would, enter this, it was kind of a transportation to a research center. So, there was this whole educational and immersive experience that drastically has changed now with the addition of Nemo. And don't get me wrong, Nemo's a lovely attraction, but I still miss the fact that the educational aspect of the Seas Pavilion is kind of lost, because as a little girl, I wanted to be a marine biologist. So that attraction for me was really, you know, a personal love. Yeah. So
George Costanza had the same feeling after going on MA here.
Yeah.
Well, what's funny about Grand Fiesta is that now it shares the same storyline as Nemo. So that's the trend.
Oh, I thought your comment earlier was really funny about how it's a blend.
Oh, and Rock and Roller Coaster, because, see, you're looking for Donald, and you have to get to the concert on time. So I'm going to be calling it Rockin' Del Nemo.
You know, it's funny. In the pre-show, Panchito actually gives a gang symbol.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. My favorite part is when you're waiting to leave, and then Donald's going, Cinco! Quattro! Tres! Anyway.
That's one of the funniest things you've ever said.
You know, the other interesting thing about this attraction is it is the only attraction that I can remember being on where the safety spiel is only in English.
Yes, isn't that ironic?
It was so unusual, because you're there and at the end, as you're waiting to disembark, you know, it looks like you can go ahead and get off, but they remind you to stay seated until you reach the actual dock, and you have the characters, you know, adios, you know, and everything, and but yet the safety spiel itself is just in English. It struck me. I actually noticed it.
What was your opinion, fanboy, the new brand new attraction?
I like the enhancements they've made to the attraction. I think, I mean, I was honestly, I don't like the Three Caballeros in terms of the film, but I like the first 5 minutes when they're singing and dancing. That's fun, and then they go to Mexico, and I get bored. So I didn't really know what to think about it, but they keep it peppy. I agree that it's not it's not like you don't see any part of Mexico. You still see Mexico. It's just now, you know, Donald's there with you, which fits, because, you know, it's not like they decided, let's just pick Pocahontas. You know, they picked a character that people associate with Mexico, and for whatever reason.
Donald Duck, yeah.
Well, you know, Three Caballeros Donald is the equivalent of Sorcerer Mickey. He's like the alternate personality that everyone associates with the character. So I liked it.
Cool. Captain?
It's good. It didn't exactly... I mean, I didn't really mind the attraction before, per se. I just thought it was dated. So I guess the changes are fine and everything. I'm not against them, but, you know, I didn't really do much. Didn't inspire me particularly, I guess.
It's good to see Eric Goldberg getting work again.
He did the animation for the attraction, and he's a former Disney animator, but he did this work now under his own company, correct?
I have no idea, but...
That's what I read anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it has a very interesting look to it. Mm-hmm. It's very
definitely
shaded and...
It's lively, too. I mean...
Very colorful.
Colors,
yeah,
are
it's
brilliant.
That's the
actually
other thing to mention, is that all the projections seem to, like, got really super crisp, and it's really pretty.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think the visuals are very engaging as you're traveling by. One of the elements that I liked is the divers. I always love the divers.
Sure.
There from the, you know, the tall cliffs. And I was worried that, you know, now that it was going to have, you know, cartoon characters, that would go away. But it doesn't. In fact, I mean, to me, this was an example of where they did it right. You have the divers doing pretty much it appears to me to be the same footage as before. The divers diving off the cliff. But then interspersed with that is Donald diving off the cliff in and not doing quite so beautifully a job as they do. And so it kind of alternates back and forth between the images of the divers and the images of Donald. And that, like I say, I thought that's one of the examples of where this was used well.
I also like the synergy there in that they were able to use some old ABC Wide World of Sports footage for that cliff dive.
Spanning Mexico for the...
Okay, that's not the only new attraction at Epcot, because this week, in fact, yesterday, as we taped this, Disney announced another... Okay, fine, fanboy, it's not brand new, but some enhancements to another attraction, Spaceship Earth. So here to tell us more about what's in store at Spaceship Earth is Rebecca.
In reading the press release, it appears that Spaceship Earth is going to be receiving enhancements, that the time travel element will remain. However, there will be new show scenes, and that the attraction story is going to be enhanced with new lighting, costumes, some new narration, a new musical score. And then at the conclusion, a new exhibit sponsored by Siemens will be entitled Project Tomorrow, Inventing the World of Tomorrow. And it'll feature several different types of interactive exhibits, and they're going to be featuring their upcoming technologies. Do you want to talk about what some of those Project Tomorrow exhibits are, guys?
Nah. But when's it going to open?
Oh.
Tomorrow?
No, yeah. 2008, actually. Oh. Early 2008.
Project Tomorrow will actually open at the end of April. Then the attraction will close for refurbishment in early summer and will reopen in November, just in time to be late for Epcot's 25th anniversary.
You wouldn't want the icon to be running for the 25th anniversary.
And then the whole project with its different phases should be done in 2008. But, I mean, I was just there today, and it looks like Project Tomorrow, not to be confused with Project Tomorrowland, which is a completely something else, is looked like parts of it were just about ready to open.
Yeah, we noticed the Super Driver, which is going to be a driving simulation video game. So we saw that, and then we noticed that they had taken down that center area, and it looked like something roundish was coming there. So
maybe,
I don't know. I don't know what it is.
An illuminated globe measuring 20 feet in diameter that will offer an ever-changing collage of inspirational images that invite guests to imagine the wonders of tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Could have read that off the
press
release.
Gotta love corporate sponsorship. Now, we just all went, I believe all four of us rode Spaceship Earth today to have it fresh in our mind.
It's almost like a grand, miraculous spaceship. And I just am glad to be one of its many passengers.
As a passenger, I rode it sideways just for this. I actually late because I had the whole road to myself, so I decided to look at it from the opposite direction. Just to see what the experience is like.
Is it better when you're not looking at the show scenes?
you should try it sometime just for a change of scenery. You get to see how they hide exit signs.
I know it's easier to do the goat trick if you're facing sideways.
And particularly the descent at the end is fun where you're sort of tilting to the side.
The big news on the actual attraction is they're going to have touch screens.
Right.
So you will
get to choose your
destination.
Choose
your own ending,
Like Horizon used to be.
Right. So now they don't have to be in the real attraction because you'll be too busy.
What? You have to bring your own sanitizing wipes with you whenever you want to.
No, that, it's an Omnimover, so they'll just stop it every time someone gets off and clean it and then keep it going.
Or maybe they'll just use styluses.
Yeah, like that's going to work. Yes, here, guest. Here's something to throw.
Maybe with a little Disney logo on the side because no one steals those. So, I don't know. Do we like this idea? I'm a huge fan of Spaceship Earth, but at the same time, I can recognize it perhaps is not the best showcase of Disney, and I'm glad they're making some changes to it. It's good to see a ride like this get updated as opposed to just totally changed or even worse, as occasionally happens, closed down. What do you guys think?
Well, the one thing, how the show scenes and everything work currently, to me, is just fine. It seems like, in general, just they need to spruce up what they have, but this seems like unnecessary reinventing of the wheel to me. It just seems like they're doing too much for a ride. I don't think it's going to, like, draw so many people in or something.
I don't know that that's the main purpose. I think it's an easy, cheap way to enhance an attraction. They want to showcase Siemens, which is obviously the core driver here. So, you know, whatever they're trying to do, make it look like make it a showcase for them. Because, I mean, we have all heard of things that were tossed about time razors and things before Siemens came on board. Then everything quieted down while Siemens tried to figure out what they wanted. I mean, and then this is the result. I mean, Siemens has been a sponsor for a while. They've been working with Disney to kind of figure out what form the attraction was going to take. I don't think the first half of the ride is going to change much at all, except maybe some enhancements, some sprucing up. Yeah, to me, I think like Haunted Mansion, what they did in Haunted Mansion, just tweaking it.
Because I mean,
think
it it definitely does need sprucing up. There's no question of that. But
I think the finale is really what's
needs help.
Well, when you go to the future, occasionally you need to update the future, as Carousel of Progress hasn't learned yet. And as exciting as teleconferencing is, maybe
exactly,
it's time to showcase something else.
Before, when you had experienced that half of the attraction, it was like, wow, I can't wait until that's the case. And now it's like, you know, I'm doing that now. So to have something there that's more of a future vision will be cool. And then I'm also wondering if we'll see a little less leaning on fiber optic and neon and whatnot, which I'm sure, you know, when the attraction was established was, you know, very... It wasn't something that you found at your local McDonald's, unlike now where, you know, I can remember coming across fiber optics in some design at McDonald's.
This is the fourth incarnation of Spaceship Earth. It's just one of those attractions.
You have to incarnate every now and then.
Right. I mean, the first time, the first version didn't last long at all, but until they brought Walter Cronkite in.
It mentions possible, or not possible, it mentions new narration in the press release. I wonder if they'll keep Jeremy Irons.
Oh, didn't you hear who's going to do it?
Who?
Patrick Warburton. Hello.
I thought it was Ratzenberger.
That was my second choice.
That was going to be Ratzenberger.
But he's too busy dancing.
That's right.
Who was it before? I know Cronkite used to do it, right?
Yeah, it was some. Cronkite was the second version. The first guy was someone you never heard of, and he was really, really boring. Mm. And he was so boring, guests were falling asleep. So Bell Laboratories, which became AT&T, asked them to spruce it up so people would stay awake. So they added Walter Cronkite.
Well, good. Looking forward to that in 2008.
I like Spaceship Earth. You don't seem like you're a big fan of it, Doobie.
Whoa. What?
Wait, what?
I'm a huge fan.
Oh, really?
You're the one that's not a huge fan.
Well, the ride system is what scares me.
It scares you to death.
Yeah. I mean, if it was a boat ride along the same scenes, it'd be one of my favorite rides.
Is there
anything
they could do about that?
Yes. In fact, I think they might be.
Because I really hope so, because that's just scary.
Today, as we were beginning our time travel, it was so rickety.
It adds a thrill to the ride.
I think they've already started enhancing the speakers and the lighting systems.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure that a major part of this because the vehicles right now have very limited power. So the touchscreens it's a complete, just like Mexico. The real reason that happened, I think, was because they needed. In order to get Disney in line with all their other attractions, this whole global operation thing that I keep hearing about, they needed to do that anyway. They added station gauge, which is really the sort of the driving force of this whole rehab. And they're like, well, you know what? Let's film some new movie. And
well, it's amazing what station gates get done around Disney. But no, I'm a huge fan of Spaceship Earth. I mean, that's definitely my favorite future world ride, not set in the air or on a test track.
There's two things about Spaceship Earth that cannot change for me.
Let me guess.
Okay.
The wand.
No. The attraction itself.
Inside the attraction.
Yes.
Walt Disney and Michelangelo. And the part in Rome where the chariot comes out and
Yay!
Then breaks into the distance.
And the sausages.
Everybody loves
the sausage
that.
Smell.
The sausage smell.
Yeah, exactly. So the Dark Ages that smells like a fantastic barbecue pit.
Which wasn't original to the attraction, I don't believe.
And then the chariot that travels in Rome.
That chariot is
I
just
love that
so
chariot.
Cool.
Yeah. I keep meaning to, pay more attention to it and then go look because it reminds me of Toot Whistle Plunk and Boom. And I'm wondering if it's, if it's just that style or what, or if it's really, just a copy of it. Because it just reminds, every time I see it, I think of Toot Whistle Plunk and Boom.
Lug-a.
You know what time it is?
What?
It's time to tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree.
Aw, that was so much fun.
Wasn't it?
Nice segue.
We had a good time.
Yeah,
he's
we went
such
to,
a performer.
We went to go see, what's his name, Tony Lake Buena Vista?
Tony Kissimmee, isn't it?
Tony Anaheim.
I thought his name was former Disney cast member Tony Orlando.
Yeah, that's the one. And he was at Epcot Flower Power concert tonight and will be playing through Saturday night, I believe.
The 14th, I know, is the date.
That would be Saturday night. Okay. Yeah, so Tony Orlando, he was not there with Dawn. I don't know where Dawn was. But
he was there with in concert. No. That's what Doobie kept giggling about because they kept saying, thank you for joining
Tony Orlando
in concert.
He seems to be about the nicest guy in the world.
He does.
No, Gary Sinise.
Okay. Yeah, him too. Okay. It's nice to see people like Gary Sinise and Tony Orlando come to Disney and represent Disney well. I mean, Tony Orlando starts it by doing the Mickey Mouse Club alma mater. And,
he knew the words, too.
He knew all the words. And he knew who his audience was and played to them very well. I've seen some concerts like this where they're like, it's almost like a challenge. I'm at Disney, now let's push the boundaries. And it's nice to see people like Tony Orlando where it's the exact opposite.
We've had the opportunity to see a lot of really great performers at Disney over the years. I remember watching some of the old 50s Disneyland shows, and they showed, like Annette at Tomorrowland and whatnot. And this was, when I was going to Disney, they didn't have concerts like that, or at least I didn't know about them. So, in the mid-70s, late 70s. So now to go to to be here in Florida and to see Tony Orlando. And out in California, we saw Dan and Dean, and we saw the Beach Boys and Chubby Checker.
Temptations.
Voyager.
And then at MGM Studios, we saw Danity Kane, which, you know, they're an up-and-coming hip-hop band.
New Year's Eve at DCA, we saw Steps. Is that who we saw? No, we did see
we
Steps.
We did see Steps.
New Year's Eve, we saw, like, Jump 5 or something.
Some group like that. And we saw Youngstown just as their career was beginning to, you know,
when we say Youngs, you say Town.
For what, a week?
Well, they were a flash-in-the-pan group, but, you know.
We caught them at that instant when they were hitting the pan.
And A-Teens, we saw A-Teens when their first album really, really gained popularity here in the U.S. So.
And speaking of people catching popularity, there's going to be a concert at the Wide World of Sports Complex as the closing ceremonies for the Disney Channel games.
I am looking forward to that.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hannah Montana.
Dun, 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 dun.
I want to go see Miley Cyrus.
So what exactly are the Disney Channel games?
You remember Battle of the Network Stars?
Very well. I miss it, actually.
Imagine that, except they're all from one network. The Disney Channel. Personally, I was rooting for the Green Team last year, unfortunately.
How do they divide it? Is it like men against women or popular shows against also-rans or people who've gone on to have other careers versus those who are still stuck in the original
draw? They do the they pit the good quality shows versus the kiddie shows that really have no end.
So they get like Ollie Johnston to play on the Walt Disney team or something like that?
Yeah.
You're so
okay.
Weird.
Well, yeah.
Anyway.
When does that – do you remember what the date is on that?
Not so the 21st.
I know it's in the
in the 20s.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Too.
Of
if
April.
You go to
yeah, it's this month.
I think it's on a website, laughingplace.com, maybe
yeah, something like that.
It's in upcoming events on Laughing.
And that's open to the public, right?
First come, first serve, and you don't have to be, as it clearly states on the website, you do not have to be a resort guest to attend.
I'm actually looking forward to that. Do they generally get? I mean, the big names is like. Corey in the house going to be there?
Oh, yeah. Kyle Massey will be there. Miley Cyrus will be there. Corbin Blue.
AJ and Allie?
I thought
they
were
on the show.
I don't know. Weren't there a couple of High School Musical names on there, too?
Yeah, I think Tisdale.
I want to say Lucas. Sure.
Zach and Cody?
Oh, yeah.
Kim Possible?
I think she might like be
she
over
has
the
a
age.
Voice.
Oh, but that would be weird.
Okay. Christy Carlson Romano.
Oh, actually, how about the guys who created Kim Possible?
No, you know.
Oh, I'd love to see them participate in one of these games, Bob and Mark.
Yeah,
that would be
if
awesome.
If I remember correctly from last year, Kim Possible and Dr. Draken actually did the color commentary.
Oh, very cool.
That's cool.
Very cool.
Wow, that's something to look forward to. Thanks for that, fanboy.
You're welcome. Oh, so back to Flower and Garden.
Oh, no. Oh. We did Tony Orlando.
Oh, but what about the other exciting part of Flower and Garden?
What's that?
How there's too much pirate music everywhere.
Well...
Yeah. Sorry, I have to say it. Even though I am a pirate fan, there's just too much pirate music.
It is a strange
theme.
It's
sort of taking away from the atmosphere of Epcot there. Just had to
they always
add
new things to the Flower and Garden Festival, and this year at the Outpost, they added the characters from The Lion King.
They're very cool. I saw those. They were actually quite popular. There were quite a few people there. They even have a couple of cast members there, I guess, to manage the crowd.
And to actually, you know, if you're lucky, they'll even tell you a secret.
In fact, they'll tell you the best-kept Disney secret.
I did see that. They're actually – they have a nice concept art of the Animal Kingdom Lodge DVC resort back there. And, yeah, DVC has reared its beautiful head one more place.
Well, it's funny because the different exhibits are presented by things like the Florida Department of Agriculture, Rainbird Corporation, Aquascape Inc., and the Disney Vacation Club. I hope – DVC, you know, and the sad thing is I know DVC paid a lot more than any of these other companies to have that sponsorship.
Well, they get the cast member discount, don't they?
I don't think divisions get discounts. I'm pretty sure they actually have to pay 20% more. And what about the other exciting Epcot news?
Do tell.
It's the biggest thing to happen to Epcot since Spaceship Earth.
What would that be?
At the Electric Umbrella?
That's
free
right.
refills.
Free Woo-hoo. Refills.
It's like Ice Station Cool with bigger cups and drinks you want to drink.
they don't have Beverly.
There's
no Beverly at the Electric Umbrella. I don't know what you're talking about. But yeah, they added drink refill station. Well, drink stations that you self-service drink stations would probably be what they would call them.
And that equals free refills.
Free refills.
And
cool.
there's no one there. Like if you ask, they say yes, you can get a refill. It's not like you're violating some thing. You don't. It's not good for the length of your stay. Like. Those Grand Californian mugs.
Now, here's my question regarding that. I noticed that the condiment bar it doesn't have the lettuce and tomatoes and onions anymore. Is that kind of what the swap has been now?
Right. They
pre-do your burger.
Okay.
And then you get the soda. And my understanding is they used to have to have a beverage runner, which made things complicated because you have your food runner and your beverage runner, and they weren't always in the same place, and just it's a lot easier just to give you a cup and then have the food people do
that makes
food.
Sense.
And, you know, I mean, we all know that Disney does not pay billions of dollars for their Coca-Cola, so...
Right.
You know, and I think it's a guest satisfier, too, which is also comes
to be honest, I'm not too sad that the condiment bar has changed a little bit, considering some horrors I've seen at that place, such as molding food.
Ew.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yes. I have seen it on way too many occasions, so now that it's gone, that's one less thing to worry about.
Yep.
Is it time for dinner, honey? Okay. Well, on that positive note, let's throw it back to the captain because...
Captain,
don't do that.
Challenge,
please.
Captain's challenge.
All right. In honor of the Grand Fiesta, or the Three Caballeros, I've got a question for you, and I don't even have notes, so why am I looking through paper?
Who's the metal man these days?
Fanboy, to the left of me.
Yay!
Yay for the Flying Dutchman. I think was the last question I asked. So anyway, in Three Caballeros, there's a short story by the name of Cold-Blooded Penguin, I believe. And the question is, what's the name of the penguin?
I know.
All right.
Pablo.
Pablo the Penguin. That is
Yay!
Correct.
Is that the one with the pebble?
No.
Or is that a different
That's
movie?
A different movie.
No, Pablo's the surfing penguin.
No.
Oh, or is
no,
he
Pablo,
the dancing penguin?
Do you remember Pablo? He's in his little bathtub, and then it starts to spring a leak, so he gets the shower head from the bathtub, and he puts it in the drain, and so the water coming up pushes out the shower head, and he gets a little motorboat.
And not to be confused with Pedro, who's a plane.
Pedro the plane.
And now for the listeners, the question is, who was the narrator for that said short story?
Patrick Corcoran. Oh, I'm sorry, John Ratzenberger.
Thank you. All right.
Let's see if Doobie remembers to ask me to.
I've got it right there on the list.
Okay.
It shan't be forgotten.
You will not forget it.
Did you say shan't?
What's wrong with shan't?
I don't know.
It's a word
it
that
themes because you know it's like close to shanty, and that's what pirates say.
Shan't is an underused word. I'm gonna
like
shall
or whom.
That's not underused in this household.
That silly word that you guys keep using regarding cleaning your palate.
Imperative.
I like the third way you pronounced it.
It's important. I didn't say infinitive. That's different. That's something when you conjugate from French class.
That's my breaking news sound because our good friend Rhett Wickham delivered an article to me a few minutes ago as we're recording this about some breaking animation news. And he was kind enough to call it into our voicemail line as well so we could share it with the whole podcasting world. Here's Rhett.
Hey, Doobie and Rebecca, and hey, Laughing Place podcast listeners. This is Rhett Wickham. It's official now. Rapunzel has a second director. In fact, he's been in place for a couple of weeks without much fanfare. So working alongside Glenn Keane now as an equal is the Annie-nominated animator and story artist, Dean Wellens, who leaves his post as head of story on American Dog to take the helm on Rapunzel alongside Keane. He first came to Disney from Warner Brothers Feature Animation, where he was directing on Osmosis Jones. He was working on the character of Thrax, a job, oddly enough, that he took over from another Disney vet, Ken Duncan, who left Warner's to go to DreamWorks. He came to Disney to work on Treasure Planet, where he was part of Glenn's team on John Silver. He started his studies at CalArts, left early to take a job on Turner's The Pagemaster as an intern, was promoted to a breakdown animator, left there to go to work for a small shop in Los Angeles called Renegade Animation, where he worked under the director Daryl Van Sitters, who was doing a number of the Warner Brothers shorts at the time. He then moved back over to Warner's officially in feature animation to work on Iron Giant, where he came to the attention of another Disney vet, Tony Fucilli, who singled him out for a swift promotion to directing animator. And in fact, he received an Annie Award nomination that year for Outstanding Individual Achievement for Character Animation for his work on the film, same year that Glenn Keane was nominated for Tarzan, but neither Keane nor Wellens won. That award went to Steve Markowski, a colleague of Wellens on Iron Giant. There isn't any news right now on how the breakdown of directing responsibilities will work between Keane and Wellens, but you can be fairly certain that it has something to do with his sense of story. That's the news. talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much, Rhett, for that information, and we'll obviously be watching Rapunzel over the next, what, couple of years?
Yeah, that's a long movie. Is it like Pirates 2?
Again with Pirates 2.
All righty. As we record this, it is, what's today, April 12th. And I believe 15 years ago today, something very special was happening across the pond.
Yes, it was. This was 15 years ago today was the last day Euro Disney didn't lose any money.
But I'm bummed.
It's the 15th anniversary of Disneyland Paris, also known as Euro Disney back in the day, before that became a running joke. And they Disney, as they often do, used this as a way to kick off a year-long celebration.
Is it actually a year this time or 15 months?
It's Euro Disney. You have to, like, scale it down from the typical 18 months to just 12.
Oh, but you know, you get a stay in the castle if you manage to be the 15th visitor to the park.
But every 15 minutes, that dang dragon wakes you up. And there, it's now it's the highest, most visited tourist attraction in Europe. But they use this opportunity to talk about some attractions they've already announced, like the Crush's Coaster.
Which looks cool, by the way.
Cars Race Rally.
Which also looks cool. Everything looks cool.
Twilight Zone Tower of Terror.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I love it. I was reading a press release on the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, and I love how they always have to tell you. When the attraction opened in Disney MGM Studios, they used the same words with the Tower of Terror, a haunted hotel towering 13 stories tall. The thrill ride will dare guests to board a ramshackle hotel freight elevator with a faster-than-the-speed-of-gravity drop that plummets 13 fear-filled floors. Same lingo. Hasn't changed.
Well, neither is the ride.
But did you know?
BYK?
Muppet Man?
That there are more nearly 70 dining locations at Disneyland Paris, serving more than 30 million meals each year. And those are like Paris meals, so they take longer. So it's like two of our meals.
I hear rats cook the food there.
it looks delicious. And you know how every attraction or everything that Disney does, there's always that one factoid that they like?
747.
Yeah, but that's the Yeti over there, Expedition Everest. But in honor of the 15th anniversary, I will reread the factoid that everybody loves about Disneyland Paris. The pink color of Sleeping Beauty Castle was specifically chosen to contrast with the hue of the European sky. I remember hearing that first time about 17 years ago and still hearing it today.
And what's odd is that now the castle in California is the same color for some reason.
To contrast with the California sky.
Who gave the proclamation for Disneyland Paris? Was it Michael Eisner?
Michael Eisner. In broken French, I believe he said, Euro Disney officiel ouvert. He didn't even try. You know, it's weird because he went to Disneyland Paris.
Don't go there. I so know where Fanboy's going.
I know, that's why I've got
it's one of the best. No, it's one of my favorite Eisner flubs from a media event. He was talking. It was when Jay Rasulo returned, and it was for the Bugs Land.
And it's when they announced that he was going to be the head of theme parks.
Right. And Eisner talked about how he. Oh, I'm going to get it wrong. How did Eisner say it? Because I'm gonna screw it up.
I thought you said we weren't going to go there.
No, we're there.
He went to Paris, not speaking a word of English, and came back speaking fluent French.
Yeah, right. Simple mistake, yes. But we chuckle about it to this day. Every time we see Jay Rasulo, we're like, wow.
Parlez-vous français?
We went there speaking not a word of English and came back speaking fluent French.
And I've been to Disneyland Paris twice, once in 95, I believe, and then also again in 2001, and it's a charming park, but you can tell that it needs its own Disney decade, and I'm hoping that with the refinancing they've done and all that kind of thing, they'll really be able to invest both in Disneyland Paris and also the Studios Park, which as we talked about last week, really needs the help. As exciting as Armageddon appears.
As the only person at this table to have gone to Paris, and you've also been to Hong Kong, how do you rank the four Magic Kingdoms you've experienced?
Well, I think it is. I mean, Disneyland's a classic, and so it's in a league of its own. So I don't think that's fair. I think I liked a lot of what they've done. my problem is, as much like IOA, they haven't done a lot since it opened. I think from a guest flow perspective, from a just pure aesthetic perspective, it's fantastic. But you can tell that the maintenance has not been what it should be. The cast isn't what they should be, and that hurts to say. And there's just they don't push the envelope anymore. I mean, they got some. I mean, the dragon is just cool, you know, and Phantom Manor is neat. But since then, what have they done?
Got the IOA disease.
Yeah, like I said before.
Well, they added a whole park.
Did you really?
Yes.
They added a whole park.
That's and you
well,
know,
half
I mean,
a park.
And this transitions into the news that was on laughingplace.com in regarding Hong Kong Disneyland, in that their unique financial structure, much like Euro Disney had a unique financial structure, is impairing them from expanding the park, which is scary.
Yeah, they were supposed to add Pirates of the Caribbean, and just yesterday we broke the, I guess at this point it's still a rumor, but it seems pretty well set that they're not going to do the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction. They are doing a
Pirates Extreme Makeover takeover from May 4th till June 30th, which, you know, by the length of that is going to be a huge, long-lasting promotion.
Are they going to show Pirates do a couple times during that?
You're going to have Ty what's-his-face
It's only
there.
A month. Come
Extreme
on, man.
Extreme Makeover Pirates Edition.
Featuring Captain Jack Sparrow's Pirate Boot Camp, which
sounds
I'm guessing
like
sounds
thing,
like
yeah.
Captain Jack Sparrow's Pirate Tutorial. Midway games, like Captain Hook's Ring Toss.
Oh, wow.
That's got to be hard for him to...
No, he holds out his hook.
Yeah,
for
he's
you.
The thing being tossed on. Not...
And from the creators of Jurassic Park 3, Wetter Than Ever, the Jungle River Cruise Pirate Takeover, where pirate sightings, frights, and delights await them around every corner.
Maybe they'll give you a flashlight and you'll have to find Simba along the way.
I remember that from an AP party at Disneyland.
And the biggest news is at Tarzan's Treehouse, they're adding a giant pirate flag that says, Pirate Island, beware. So I don't know why that quite made the press release, but I guess anything to take off attention to what had happened at Disneyland's Tarzan's Treehouse is a good thing.
Wow. So as you were saying, the financial structure of Hong Kong, which is what, basically the government pays for
it? Disney and the government work together, which is always fun when you have to work with somebody.
And as a result, they're not getting Pirates, and that was their first that was to be their first major addition, wasn't it?
Well, unless you count Small World.
Yeah, you count Small World.
Yeah, well, so Small World would be their first major addition.
Okay.
And Autopia.
That's not major.
Well, it's huge. Well, and I mean, don't lie. They're getting the Doctors of Soul Voodoo Drum Show. I mean, it's not like they're completely not getting any support. And
do you think this change, this lack of support now for Hong Kong Disneyland is going to lead to, you know, there have been rumors percolating for, you know, a long time that Disney was looking at Shanghai.
And honestly, I know very little about the international expansion, except I know it's a
right.
key priority, and I know that isn't set. And I think...
What do you think, Doobie?
Well,
maybe they should like tie it with all this other pirate stuff. They should just build it in Singapore instead of tie it at World's End.
Of Chow Yun Fat AAs. I think Disney's learned its lesson a little bit in that it's hard to work with a government. You know, they don't like spending money uselessly, especially, you know, like communist governments.
Yeah, in Tokyo, where they obviously used a different company, they used a private company, which has been by our standard doing much more than willing to spend money on new things over the years, things that maybe have changed recently with the declining attendance. But yeah, when you're working with a government in Hong Kong, presumably they'd have to do the same thing in Shanghai. And like you said, a communist government, I think that changes everything.
Also, Oriental Land Company is unique in that they're not, they have their own pride in the Disney brand, and you know, the laws of Tokyo necessitated them being a partner, but they don't run this simply as, you know, value. They don't look at it just a spreadsheet. They really value the Disney way. I mean, even if you're just overhearing the stuff you hear when they visit Disneyland or Disney World, I mean, you know, as any Disney fan, you try and, like, you know, cozy up to the folks while they're riding something, and you can tell that it's very important they do it the Disney way. I mean, when Tokyo Disneyland first opened, everything had to be just like Disneyland. They wouldn't have anything new except Meet the World. So I think that's that's the anomaly, and I think Disney might be realizing that at this point.
What has the attendance been like in Hong Kong, though?
it's been lower than expected. But I think the other thing when it comes to Hong Kong is it's the true value is not just the park. They're using it as a way to motivate and germinate the Disney brand in China.
Right, but from the government's perspective, do you think perhaps they're seeing less?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's I think the problem is Disney has a vested interest in that park being a success more than the government does. I mean, because the park will have a natural attendance base, but Disney wants it to flourish and grow and be a talk, you know, something that everyone's talking about. And I think Disney is in an interesting place right there.
Do you know, are things structured that if Disney wanted to push ahead with things like this, they could on their own dime?
It's obviously a complicated situation. I know Disney does have more power than the government when it comes down to creative control. And they might, you know, I mean, I'm sure if Disney said, hey, we're just going to spend this money to build Pirates of the Caribbean, I don't see why the government would say, no, don't spend your money for a brand new attraction that helps us make money. But at the same time, Disney's not going to do that.
Right, because that would certainly set a precedent for years to come.
And so it would be interesting. I mean, you know, and honestly, the business climate in China is not set in stone yet. Things can, especially in Hong Kong, things are changing. And you've got to, you know, go with the flow. And I mean, even with Tokyo.
Keep moving forward.
Yeah, and even in Tokyo with OLC, there's a, you know, Disney International's whole point is to nurture and facilitate that relationship in a symbiotic way. So there's a lot of effort that goes into the sort of give and take when you license basically your park.
Interesting stuff in Disney International. Very interesting, actually. I mean, I know we live in the world of Disneyland and Disney World, wholly owned companies, and it's a very different world when you get outside, even to Paris and Tokyo, and especially to Hong Kong, and thinking about Shanghai. Really interesting business stuff.
And I think that's why you won't see a lot of Disney product outsourced here, because there's reasons it's done there that you're not going to see Disney licensing things like Disney Quest or Club Disney, I think, because they realize the creative control is really, I mean, especially with Bob, creative control is really important.
Go Bob. Late last month, the legendary Imagineer Roger Broggi, most known for his work on the Disneyland Railroad, received a coveted Window on Main Street, an honor bestowed upon those who helped build and create Disneyland through the years. And it got us thinking about what other Imagineer or someone else deserves a window on Main Street at Disneyland. A lot of famous people already have them, like Mark Davis, Harriet Burns, numerous other people. A lot of websites have
those. I mean, household names, really.
They are if you're Disney geeks like us.
Yes, so true. But
you know who Mark Davis is. You know who Harriet Burns is. Although there's a couple on there you probably don't know. There's some esoteric people on there who have windows.
You know my two favorite windows? One of them's not at Disneyland, but one of them is at Disneyland, one's not. You want to know?
I mean, sure.
My favorite one of my favorite ones is the one they've recently added to all the Magic Kingdoms, the casting agencies, which is dedicated to all the cast members. It's put on the ground floor to give it some level of prominence, and it says, you know, you can dream, design, create, and build the most magical place on earth, but it takes people to make that dream a reality, which is nice because, I mean, and the cast members really took that to heart. You know, they take pictures in front of it. They made a cast member pin of it, and I think that's cool.
That is very cool.
Also, a fun one over the Market House at Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. They have a window that has all the fictitious names of the companies that bought the land for Walt Disney World. And you look at them, and you're like, really? I wonder what Retlaw would mean. And you wonder why it took so long to figure out that it was Disney buying the property. But I think that's a neat little homage, if you will, too.
That's very cool. So anyway, it got us thinking about who else at Disneyland should get a window on Main Street at this point. I know what some of our favorites are, because we've discussed this before, but we'd like to hear some of your favorites. And Sam McKim. Yeah, he'd be a good one. Alice Davis, I think. There's a place right next to Mark Davis's window that would be beautiful for his wife, who is still alive, Alice Davis. I did mention earlier Roger Broggi. His window was posthumous because he passed away years ago, I believe. So, who do you think deserves a window on Main Street at Disneyland? Podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. Let us hear what you think. We will be talking about this next week. Captain, I remembered. It's your turn.
All right, the question was who supplied the voice for the narrator in the Cold-Blooded Penguin, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's just from my memory. That's what it's called. In the Three Caballeros, none other than, take a guess.
Paul Frees?
My guess is Sterling Holloway.
You are correct. Ding, ding, ding.
Thank you.
What a thoughtful little bear you are.
Aw, that's cute.
Yeah, it is.
Sometimes I'm a little black rain cloud.
So yeah, Sterling Holloway, also known as, most known as Winnie the Pooh, and various, you know, the Cheshire
Cat. Stork,
cat.
Right? Wasn't he the Stork?
Dumbo. Stork. Mm-hmm.
Wasn't he Mr. French?
No.
Who's that?
Sebastian Cabot.
How do I confuse those two?
That was the panther.
Wait, wasn't Sterling Holloway on TV?
No.
Yeah,
in
The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh.
He didn't have a TV show.
He's been on TV, but not so much. I mean, not
he's
like
a character
I can't
actor.
Think,
he's done,
yeah,
like everything.
I can't think of any specific character that I can tell you.
He's
you
a Patrick Warburton of his generation.
Okay.
Did you know that that guy in Meet the Robinsons was not Patrick Warburton?
It sure sounded like him, though.
Because
yeah,
all animated coaches must be voiced by Patrick Warburton.
It's not that he sounded like it. It's like when he showed up on the screen and he was about to speak, everyone expected Patrick Warburton's voice to come out. Did you, Rebecca?
No.
I know you did, fanboy. Yeah.
In fact, it took me back.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out why the two of you were giggling like schoolgirls.
Yeah, like, here it comes. That's not Patrick. Anyway, podcast at laughingplace.com, 866-718-9408. Who needs a window on Main Street? And anything else that's on your mind? And before we go, as always, I'd like to get a final word from Captain John.
What do you do with a drunken sailor early in the morning? I thought I'd throw the lack of pirateness.
You went to Adventures Club this week, didn't you?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I've been there before.
I know, but what did you think of this visit?
It's interesting because the cast changes. Whoever, you know, although you see the familiar faces, they're always playing the different characters, so it's fun to see how other people play certain wacky roles.
No, there's only one Hathaway Brown. He just magically appears differently every day.
All right.
Value the magic.
Okay.
Fanboy?
Stay tuned for big fanboy news in the coming weeks.
Whoa.
That's what we like to call a tease.
Does that mean you're going to be big, or is it...
it's big, big. Bigger than Madonna.
Wow, I can't wait to hear. And Rebecca, anything you'd like to say to the folks before we close today?
As we were leaving the park following the Flower and Garden Festival last week, we saw a bunch of cast members standing in front of the fountain there at Epcot, and they were their voice came. Oh, first we heard the Olympic theme, and then the Heroes fanfare, and then we heard the voice of, you know, Epcot announcing to all of us, you know, please welcome our newest Epcot cast members. And people broke into applause, and there was this ring of cast members there. And I just thought that was a really special moment to just for them to take a moment and let their new cast be acknowledged in that way. And then after that little portion, I guess they do some sort of swearing in, as it were, where the cast raised their right hand and they said something. I'm not sure exactly what it was. We didn't, you know, eavesdrop.
I solemnly swear I am up to no good.
I don't think it's the Pirates Code.
That's not the Pirates Code. That would be the Marauders from Harry Potter.
Oh, code. Right. Oh, of course. Sorry.
See, I'm covering too many. But I need to just stick with piracy, or else I'm going to confuse everybody.
We're not bringing Harry Potter into this.
I think they say we are building the future Epcot.
But I just thought that was really cool. And then on the flip side, we saw a magical moment.
Oh, I was going to talk about that.
Which I'm just not sure how magical it was, but I'll let Doobie talk about it.
Oh, Rebecca's the one that saw it, but she described it very well. Custodio, because they get to play the whole magical Year of a Million Dreams thing, and they come out, and they throw trash on the ground, which is, you know, pretty clean trash.
Empty water bottles, cans.
And then they give kids the fun little tools with you pull the trigger, and it activates a claw about 3 feet away, and the kid's going to go around and pick up the trash and put it in the trash can and, I presume, recycle bins.
One bin is plastic, one bin is aluminum.
While their parents stand around and take pictures.
Lots of pictures.
It's just...
Lots and lots of pictures.
Bizarre, but
of their children
cute.
Picking up trash at Epcot.
And to think, my mom had to wait until I got arrested before she got those pictures.
Well, in addition, not only do they get a magical moment certificate, they get a casting scout card.
But it was a funny moment. We were walking past a topiary, and all of a sudden, just this bucket of garbage was dumped on the ground.
One down, 999,999 to go.
What would be so proud?
Now that's just trash talk right there.
Talk to you next week.